This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Big Brothers Big Sisters, a community of caring, is marking its 60th anniversary. Coming up, CEO Amy Kukta tells us about their plans to mark the anniversary and help more children through mentoring in Southwest Michigan. But first, Western Michigan University's Homer Stryker MD School of Medicine recently received full accreditation. Another major milestone is coming later this year when the first class of students graduates. Dr. Hal Jensen is dean of Western Michigan University's Medical School. Thank you very much for being here.
Well, thank you. It's fun to be here this morning and to celebrate some of our recent successes.
How big a step is full accreditation for the med school?
Well, this is the step that I've been waiting 7 years since I came to Kalamazoo for the phone call I received a couple of weeks ago from the Liaison Committee on Medical Education, which accredits all of the MD programs across the country. This is the stamp of approval of our curriculum, of our faculty, of our MD program. This is really a major step for the medical school, and we've done really well, but it's just huge.
Take us a little bit through the process. Obviously, you know, we want to make sure that doctors are well-trained and well-educated so that when they come out the other side, they're able to go and practice medicine. So what's the accreditation process to make sure that happens?
It's complicated. It's been 7 years in the making, and we're not all the way done yet. There are three different entities that we have to worry about accreditation or certification, and we've been working on all of those since actually even before I came. The LCME is the entity that accredits the MD program. There are five steps. That started in 2010, and actually we had preliminary accreditation in 2012 with a site visit. We had another site visit with provisional accreditation in 2016. Every step along the way, they come, they give you a pretty rigorous examination and look very deep into all of the things you do. And then that culminated with the last step, which is full accreditation. We had full accreditation for 5 years, which is the maximum you can get as a new school. So we've done just as well as we could with LCME. There are two other entities we have to get accreditation from. One is the Department of Education for certification for Title IV. Again, this is Title IV federal financial aid. This is something we've been working on from my very first conversation with John Dunn before I came. Something that's been very important to us, and we received that certification in 2017. And then the third is from Higher Learning Commission. They're one of the six regional accreditors across the United States that accredits all the colleges and universities. And as you recall, Western Michigan University Homer Stryker MD School of Medicine is a private medical school, so we had to get separate accreditation from HLC. We've been in that process, and we had accreditation from HLC that was in 2016. And now we are just in the last step. Hopefully in June, they'll move us ahead to full accreditation. Their process is that they have to wait until after the first class graduates before you get full accreditation. We've gone through the entire accreditation process just as fast as anybody could. We've done really well. It's been a lot of work by the faculty, the staff, even the students have participated to a very great extent with our accreditation. But it's been a lot of work by a lot of people. We've done really well, and it's great to see the medical school succeeding at this stage.
And that first graduating class actually happens this year for the Homer Stryker MD School of Medicine.
That's right. Our graduation is going to be on Sunday, May 13th, and that will actually be here at Miller Auditorium. We're also going to have an open house on Saturday, May 12th. That open house is open in the afternoon for members from the community because we want to celebrate the role of the community in the success of the medical school as well. The downtown community, but the broader community, has been incredibly supportive of this medical school. And yes, we do have three incorporators of the medical school, Western Michigan University, Borges, and Bronson. But I sometimes have said, often have said, we have a fourth parent, and that parent is the community. And we appreciate the support of the community in so many ways to help with the success of the medical school and our medical students. And so we're having this community open house at the downtown campus of the medical school Saturday afternoon, May 12th.
One of the reasons that people thought that another medical school was needed in the state of Michigan, actually more than Western's, but medical schools at other universities, is, you know, that we see down the road that we may not have enough doctors. So the hope is they're going to stay here in Michigan. And of course, I guess if we look at students from Western, we hope they might even stay in the Kalamazoo area. Do you think that is the way it's going? Are these students that graduate this year likely to stay around Southwest Michigan?
Absolutely. And if you look at the history of Kalamazoo, but also other places that have residency training programs, about a third of residents who train in programs will stay in that area to practice medicine after residency. So our medical students after graduation will go through a process to match, and actually next week is match week, where our students will find out where they're going to match to do residencies. We anticipate that many students will stay here in Kalamazoo in the residency programs that are part of the medical school that have been here sponsored by Bronson and Borges for decades and now have become integrated as part of the medical school. Many of them will stay in our residency programs and many of them will stay here in the area. We pay attention to students who come from Southwest Michigan who want to go to medical school. That's part of our selection process because we know that those students will want to stay close to family and stay here in the region. And so we want to be that pipeline. And that was an important part of why Bronson and Borges became part of the medical school, was to develop that pipeline for physicians for the future, realizing that they need that pipeline of providers, but the communities need the pipeline of physicians to serve the communities.
That first class of students who came here in 2014 and will graduate had 54 students. You added a class of 84 students this past fall. Started this school year. That is the first full class, correct, at the Homer Stryker MD School of Medicine?
We've grown from the initial class of 54 to 60 to 72 and now 84 students in the fourth class that started last fall. And that will be our target size, is 84 students a year. And we think that's a very good number for Kalamazoo and the region for training of medical students. It allows us to continue to give students that very personal attention that's been the legacy of medical education for decades. It's a nice size in terms of a class. It's not too big. It's not too small. Our students get a lot of personal attention. As I tell our students, you can't hide. And all of our students, our residents, get a lot of personal attention from the faculty from throughout the community.
84 is the maximum. I mean, there's no chance of going beyond that.
Well, that's our target size. The numbers in the medical in any given medical school class at any time during the 4 years may ebb and flow a bit. People take leaves of absence, or you know, life gets in the way, a parent, or other health issues, or sometimes we had a student who took a year and did a very very prestigious fellowship, so that student deferred and will come back and graduate the following year. But that's a very good reason to defer for a year. And many students in medical schools across the country will take 5 years to graduate because they will do other things during the 5 years besides just medical school. But 84 is a nice size. It's the size we've built the building for, so we can go up a little bit to accommodate the ebbs and flows of students, but 84 is our target size.
You have had no problem attracting applicants for the medical school. The last round was something more than 4,000 applicants, correct?
We've had over 4,500 applications last year. It's interesting that if you look at the academic qualifications of our students, they've always been above the national average of incoming medical students. So as a new medical school, we've started off above average, which I think is really pretty good. But we have a very rigorous selection process. We pay attention not just to the academic metrics, but we pay attention to the experiences the students have, because those experiences bring value, and sharing those experiences with other medical students brings value. But we also pay attention, a great deal of attention, to what we call attributes. So experiences are the things that you've done. Attributes are who you are. And so we have been able to recruit not just really great students, but really great individuals, really great people, because you need to be a competent physician, but you also need to be a compassionate physician. So interestingly, because our process has been so competitive and we've been so successful getting really good candidates to apply, our applications probably are going to go down a couple hundred this year. But that's actually a sign because students who in the past would look at us and say, hey, it's a new medical school. It's going to be easy to get into this medical school. It hasn't been because we've been very competitive. And so we still will have over 4,000 applications, very competitive pool, very qualified applicants, and we're doing very well in recruiting really great individuals to Kalamazoo.
How do you think you've been able to recruit so well with a new medical school that, you know, doesn't really have, you know, when you start off from ground zero, you don't necessarily have a reputation right off the bat, whereas other medical schools can point to, you know, here's our graduates, here's the people who've gone on and have been able to have successful medical careers. What do you think was Western's secret there?
Well, I don't know that it's a secret. We're pretty open, but as I would tell the applicants when I meet with them when they come to interview with us, it is a bit of a leap of faith. There are going to be some students who are not going to want to go to a new medical school, but then there are students who maybe like me coming as a founding dean. Why would I come here to a new medical school instead of another medical school? It's the opportunity to really make a difference and to have an impact. And I think for students also, it's a chance where they knew that we were going to be listening to them and we wanted to have their involvement. And there were opportunities here as a new school. So we did recruit students who have that kind of pioneering spirit. And we still want to continue that. We want students who are going to look to the future and be innovative and be creative and solve problems. And those are the kinds of students that we wanted to come to help us as we work through finishing the design of the medical school with our students' involvement.
As I said, you are Dr. Hal Jensen. So you're an MD.
Yes.
How much has medical education changed? You know, what sort of things are these students experiencing that someone would not have experienced at the time you were going into medical school?
It's changed immensely. And if you take a look at the traditional three-legged stool of medical schools, it's been education, research, and clinical care. And certainly we pay attention to that just as much as any other medical school. We've added a couple of other important aspects to the medical school curriculum because we see these as gaps in training of physicians for the future. And one is leadership. And in the past, when I went to medical school, when most of my generation went to medical school, we didn't talk about leadership. And leaders kind of emerged, but it wasn't by design. It was more by default. And we realize that for the future, leadership from among physicians is going to be key. And we need to be involved in that role at all levels, at the hospital level, at the medical school level, in our communities, and even legislatively. The other aspect that we put into our curriculum that I think distinguishes us is advocacy. Advocacy not just for our profession, but for our patients and the communities we serve. And we feel that our students need to start learning those skills about leadership and advocacy from the very beginning. So our students learn that, our residents learn that. That's part of our faculty development as well, to develop the leaders and advocates for tomorrow.
Is leadership and advocacy maybe a little more important at a time when we're really still having a pretty big debate over what our healthcare system should look like? And it may be a separate question of actual health care. We're talking about health insurance, how it's paid for, but obviously doctors, you know, have a stake in that. So is leadership and advocacy important as we debate that maybe doctors get their voice heard?
Absolutely. And I think that's been one of the gaps in the past is that physicians have not been at the forefront. We've let the attorneys and lawyers and legislators take over much of that role. We need to be more active advocating for the patients we serve, advocating for the communities we serve. And that's a key role of developing those skills in our students and our residents.
Let's talk about a little different thing that I know the med school has had some programs on, the opioid crisis. This is something that, of course, has a component in medicine, but there's lots of other things going on here. You know, there's societal issues and those sort of things. Do you try to incorporate, you know, other aspects into this, or do you kind of stay in your lane and say, you know, our job is to address the medical part of it?
There's many aspects to this, and we do take a comprehensive, holistic approach to this. So certainly there are some medical aspects that we have to pay attention to, but there's a lot of psychological, social issues that we have to pay attention to as well. And we've done taken a very broad approach to this. For example, one physician in the medical school, Will Nettleton, who's an MD, master of public health also, serves in in a role at both Calhoun County and Kalamazoo County as the medical director to help with population health in the community, because it's not just within the medical school, it's within the community. And he's been already, in the short time he's been here, he's emerged as a leader in this area, working with other county officials and state officials. We have another physician, Bill Fales, in emergency medicine, who serves on the state board and state roles, as well as regional roles in emergency medical disaster planning. And those kinds of roles are really key to making sure that the medical school is not just within the walls of the medical school, but really is engaged in the community and serving to meet the needs of the community. So with the opioid crisis, we have paid attention to the needs of the community in helping develop what we can help with as physicians and as a medical school.
Got about 15 seconds left, probably not enough time to do this, but, you know, is there something we should look for next at the medical school, a next big step that we might see take place anytime soon?
March 16th will be match day for our fourth-year students as they learn where they're going to go complete their residency and the next step of their medical education. May 13th is our graduation. May 12th on Saturday will be the open house for the community. This medical school succeeds because of the support of the community. It's greatly appreciated and will be needed in the future.
Dr. Jensen, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Hal Jensen is Dean of Western Michigan University's Homer Stryker MD School of Medicine. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Big Brothers, Big Sisters, a community of caring, has grown over its 60-year history. It started in 1958 as Big Brothers of Greater Kalamazoo, became Big Brothers, Big Sisters of Greater Kalamazoo in 1976. It now serves a region that includes Kalamazoo, Calhoun, Van Buren, and Allegan counties. To mark the 60th anniversary, Big Brothers Big Sisters wants to increase the number of children who have mentors in Southwest Michigan. Amy Kukta is CEO of Big Brothers Big Sisters, a community of caring. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Why is mentoring a need in Kalamazoo County as well as the other counties that Big Brothers Big Sisters serves?
Well, we know that every successful adult can look back in their life and think about someone who, when they were a child, took a special interest in them, provided additional support, encouragement, and I think really every child needs to have that opportunity. Unfortunately, not all kids have that person in their life.
Now, for some children, that may very well be a parent. So are you looking here specifically at children who either, don't have two parents in the home or perhaps a parent who is not really able to be a mentor?
Well, typically the kids in our program are those who have an identified need for an additional caring role model. So the parents actually are signing them up for the program because they realize their child can use some additional support. So it's not so much a matter of them not having that in the home as opposed to needing some additional support to be successful in life.
Now, you say that you want to help an additional 300 children through mentoring. How did you come up with that number?
Really, we looked at what we've done in the past. This past year, we served an additional 250 kids in Kalamazoo, and in honor of our 60th anniversary and our capacity and the growing need, we wanted to set a stretch goal of 300 new matches.
And how many mentors do you think you're going to need to actually meet that goal?
Right now, I'd say we need about 250 additional mentors. We've had a good start to the year. However, we need to continue that momentum to make sure we can not only reach, but hopefully exceed our goal.
How ambitious do you think this is? Are there a lot of people out there who you think are going to hear this and say right away, yeah, it's a great idea, or is it going to require a little more coaxing than that?
I'd say probably both. I'm hoping that people are excited after hearing this segment today, but it's definitely a stretch goal for us. I'm confident that we can reach it, but it's going to take some intentional work.
What can a mentor mean to a child? What does it mean to them to have, whomever that is in their life, above and beyond what they have in the home?
I think a mentor is someone who sees the potential in a child and is really able to take a supportive role. As a parent, I tend to focus on certain things with my daughter, probably have a bias and certain goals for her, whereas a mentor is there to see the child's goals and help them achieve it. So I'd say it's an impartial person who sees the potential and helps a child see it and helps them reach that goal.
And maybe doesn't have to do some of the things that a parent has to do, day-to-day sort of thing. Is it a little different role in that way?
Yes, I would say it's very different. Really, a mentor should not be a disciplinarian. They really should just be a role model and encourager, someone there to really help the child have new experiences and opportunities to expand their view of what's possible.
Are mentors always the same gender as the child?
Typically, yes. We do have some women who are matched with boys. However, we're always looking for more male mentors. You know, nationally, there's never enough. And so when we do have a male that comes forward, we do want to match them with a young man so they can have that opportunity.
And is it the case that you have more male children out there who you're trying to find mentors for?
Yes, there's always more males or young boys who need mentors for than we actually have mentors available. Women are more likely to step up and volunteer, and that's not only just locally, that's nationally.
What does someone have to do to be a mentor?
Really, you know, I think in some ways it's much less complicated than people think. Really, what we ask for is a minimum of a year. We know that matches less than a year can actually set kids back in terms of trust and some consistency. So I would say minimum of a year and twice a month, maybe 2 hours, really makes a tremendous impact.
Is there any sort of training required or education?
Yeah, I mean, really, I think what sets us apart from other volunteer opportunities is that it's not only a very thorough onboarding process, but our professional staff are also assigned to each match to make sure that it's successful. So as long as a volunteer and child are matched in our program, they have one of our professionally trained staff who is there to encourage them, to help provide support and guidance. So a volunteer isn't just there on their own. They actually have the agency behind them and walking alongside to make sure that the match is successful.
Do they, you know, have any sort of teaching or training beforehand, though, to make sure that, you know, they kind of understand what they're supposed to be doing?
Sure, we do. So if people are interested in volunteering, the first thing they do is come to a volunteer orientation, which takes about an hour and a half, because we want to make sure that the volunteers, before starting the process, really are aware of what the expectations are, what our role is, and what we'll be asking of them.
I'm assuming that someone that would do this would have to go through background checks and those sort of things.
Sure. We're focused on child safety and also what we call intentional matching. So people coming through the program would go through an interview with one of our staff. We also do reference checks and background checks. And really, the process is trying to make sure that we make the best match possible. So we want to know as much as we can about the volunteer and their interests and what they have to offer so we can make the best match with the child who's on our waiting list.
Now, you do have a program which has tried to seek mentors for LGBT youth. And those mentors themselves are LGBT or part of the LGBT community, correct?
Yeah, I'm really excited. This is actually a new program model that we're piloting. And my hope is that we're meeting a need in the community that's not currently being met. So I'm really inspired and excited that we're going this direction.
Do you think there are other sort of things out there, maybe experiences people have where, you know, the adult should probably have some of that in their own background if they're going to really mentor that child well?
You know, I think part of our interview process really gets at that. I think as adults, we all come forward with our own experiences. As an example, I lost my father when I was fairly young. So I would do well with a child who probably had gone through that experience. So what we do is really work with the volunteer to see what's shaped them to become the adult they are and match that with an identified need for a child who could really connect also on that level.
So if someone is interested in being a mentor, what should they be doing right now?
I would say the best thing is to call our office and come to a volunteer orientation. There's no expectation after the orientation that someone absolutely has to continue in the process. We really like it to be an initial introduction to make sure whether or not it's a good fit or good timing for the person.
Yeah, the person who comes may conclude after hearing all that's involved that, you know, it's not for them. Maybe it's not for them right now.
I think that's exactly it. And I'd rather know up front that it's not for someone. Like I tell people all the time also is we've been here 60 years and we're not going anywhere. So if now in your lifetime isn't the opportunity, down the road it may be.
So 60 years is kind of a big milestone. And Big Brothers, Big Sisters Community of Caring is marking that with this mentorship program. Are there other things you're planning to do to mark 60 years?
Sure. We're really trying to infuse it in all of our messaging, everything that we're working on this year. We'd have an annual back-to-school bash, and I'm hoping that we're going to turn that into somewhat of a birthday celebration because 60 years, as you mentioned, is a big accomplishment. So finding a way to let the community join us and celebrate the fact that we've come this far.
When you look at where things have gone over 60 years, I mean, what are your thoughts about how the organization has changed? Obviously, you weren't there at the beginning. But, you know, what are some of your thoughts about how Big Brothers Big Sisters has grown in Southwest Michigan and some of the things it's doing now that maybe it wasn't doing, you know, even 20 or 25 years ago?
I think we've gotten much more creative with our mentoring models, which has allowed us to remove barriers for people who would like to volunteer. Before, it was a very concrete 8 hours every week in the community. Years ago, that was the model. But really, we've expanded what our expectations are for the mentors because we know that the consistency is the key piece. We've also added programming in schools. We've added programming in businesses. And the thing that I'm finding is really resonating right now is what we call big couples and big families. So before, I think the expectation was that it was always a one-on-one. But what we're saying now is do what you're going to do with your family, your spouse. Just bring a child with you. So, for example, my daughter and I have a little sister that we've mentored together for 5 years now, and it works really well because I'm not taking time away from my family, and actually my daughter gets the opportunity to be a volunteer as well. So I think the big thing really is the creativity in terms of programming, however, remaining true to the fidelity of our model, which is one child. So it is always one child who's matched. It's just the location or the structure that they're matched in.
And do you think in a way maybe you are planting the seeds with children like your daughter that they may be mentors down the road because they are experiencing it when they're young and perhaps they see some of the benefits at an age when a lot of other kids may not really understand what's going on with mentors and the children they're helping?
Definitely. I mean, that's my hope. We're really preparing the next generation. In fact, some of the adults we have mentors right now, or even on our board of directors, were mentors when they were in high school, too. So I think we are preparing that next generation to see the responsibility and the opportunity and to step up.
So looking ahead beyond 60 years, what are some of the areas where Big Brothers Big Sisters is looking now? You mentioned being a little more creative. Are there things that you're looking for out there, different needs that you think people may be needed to fill?
You know, I think one of my priorities long term is making sure our kids are prepared for post-secondary success, whatever that looks like. In the past, it was everybody has to go to college. And I think we're realizing now with the workforce that there's a lot of skilled trades out there that pay fairly well. And we need kids becoming adults who are prepared to do that. So I really like to see us be a little more intentional about making sure kids are prepared to, you know, have a successful career once they graduate high school. So a little more intentionality about career choices, looking at schools, workplace ethic, behaviors that are needed.
And does it help if you can get a diverse range of mentors in terms of the fields they work in, that you can get some people who do work in skilled trades? They're not all people who necessarily got a four-year degree.
That's exactly it, I think. I think that every adult brings unique experiences and strengths, and I don't think it's based at all on what their background is or their career or their educational experience. I think it has to do with their commitment to helping kids in the community. So really, there are no parameters. I'm not saying, well, we need all college professors or we need all lawyers. We just need caring adults.
You serve, you know, four counties in Southwest Michigan, but of course, you know, in the city of Kalamazoo, there is the Kalamazoo Promise. Is that an added sort of incentive to kind of prepare people for post-secondary, including, you know, community college, which if you go to the Kalamazoo Public Schools, that's covered by the Kalamazoo Promise?
Yeah, I think it definitely is. We do quite a bit of programming with kids who attend Kalamazoo Public Schools, serving also more middle school and high school students through our workplace mentoring. And my hope with that is that they are more prepared to take advantage of the promise when they do graduate. So that's definitely something that's on our radar.
So the goal for attracting more mentors, is this going to be, at least starting off, a year-long campaign to mark your 60th anniversary?
Yes, it really is. I mean, the need's always going to be there. However, we're really launching into a campaign now because we want to make sure that it's not the end of the year and we're still scrambling. It would be great to actually have an abundance right now and then figure out, great, we have 250 new and then 200 on top of that. How do we go ahead and meet that need?
How many mentors are there right now?
Right now, we actually, in our four-county area, have about 700 open active matches. So that means as of today, there's 700 mentors mentoring kids in our four-county area.
Do you have any sort of rate of turnover? I mean, do people, after a while, maybe they move, maybe they reach a point in life where they say, you know, I've got other things that are priorities, and so you have to replace mentors as you go?
We do. I mean, our goal, you know, we ask for a year. Our goal obviously is much longer, and typically the matches do last longer. Typically reasons that they might end are either the child graduates or the volunteer moves. But right now we look at our average match length, how long matches are lasting, and it's about 3.5 years for our programs in our community, which is fantastic.
Amy Kukta, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Amy Kukta is CEO of Big Brothers Big Sisters, a community of caring. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.